Hello there. You're listening to the Watson's Daily Podcast with me, Peter Watson, on Friday, the 14th of January. Today, I'm joined for the last time this week by Duncan Balcon, who is a Watson's Daily ambassador. Hi there, Duncan. How are you doing today?
Hi, Peter. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. So today, end of the week, end of the first week of these podcasts as we're back from the festive season. So what did you find most interesting in today's edition of Watson's Daily?
Yeah, it's been a good week. I just want to put that out there right now. I know I'm biased because I've been involved, but it's been a good week. For me, this is a story from Financial Times this morning about short sellers tucking into Beyond Meat. So people that have listened to podcasts for a while will know that anytime there's a meat alternative story, I get quite excited about them. I don't know why. I don't know what it is. Yeah. It's those in electric vehicles. I, for some reason, really enjoy every time they pop up. This is from the Financial Times. It's highlighting, in fact, Beyond Meat has become one of the most shorted companies in US stock market card history, I think, because it's been shorted to a ridiculous extent. And this is kind of based off the back, I think, they're saying that investors think actual sales won't match the hype that surrounded the company, which I guess is kind of makes sense. There has been a lot of hype, particularly with more people trying to cut meat out or doing Veganuary or whatever. There's been a lot of hype around these companies. So obviously it's become one of the most shorted companies on the stock market. And I find this interesting because obviously for a lot of people, this would seem like a bit of a weird time of year for this to happen. January being that month at the moment where a lot of people are trying to do vegan for a month and see what happens. I think you made a really interesting point in Watson's Daily today that actually one of the side effects of being shorted so heavily like this is that even when you have a good news story as a company that would normally kind of skyrocket the share price, it has a much more muted response. So the really interesting thing for me is that this has happened in January, and actually as a result, the mass probably big uptick in sales through Veganuary may not actually have as much of an effect as it would normally have had in terms of rebounding this share price.
And I think you've
made a couple of really interesting points in Watson's Daily about kind of what this could mean from going forward. And I'd have to say I'm in a position now where I think that the best thing they can do as a company is try and find more of these kind of more distributors or more partners in terms of restaurants and supermarkets to increase their volumes. Because I think for so long, they've been very, very niche in terms of the kind of the aiming mainly just at vegans. And now they're starting to come out into more eateries and more supermarkets. Actually, it's more of a mainstream company. And making that transition, I think, between being a very niche company and being more kind of aimed at everybody can be a bit turbulent. Which I think is possibly why this is why this kind of stock prices thing is happening. But I think if they manage to kind of get some more partners in terms of more restaurants they're in and things, I think they might be okay long term. I think they will be okay long term. I don't think that people are suddenly going to go back to eating all meat and vegan products and going to get thrown away. So it's just a bit of turbulence. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. What is your take on this?
I think Beyond Meat is a very interesting company. I think it's doing very interesting things. I think it's got a good name. The name Beyond Meat, it is what it does. I mean, it's better than names like Quorn, for instance, which just sounds weird. I think that some investors or some commentators are saying that this shorting etc is down to the fact that they think this is a fad, that it's no longer a growth stock anymore, that kind of thing. But I disagree with that. I'm a meat, not because I'm particularly proud of it or whatever, but I'm saying this not as a vegan or a vegetarian. I think that it is a good thing, and it's doing good things, and that it has got a seat at the table at the moment in terms of food. But I just think that it's gone from this much hyped company to a company that's been doing real, you know, making real strides, you know, signing deals with things like with company, you know, KFC or McDonald's and things like that. I mean, that they're, you know, that's big. But I just think that they need, there's something more. You know, I think that they need, I mean, I was watching Spider-Man, the Spider-Man movie, most recent Spider-Man movie recently at the cinema. And I remember there was actually a Beyond Meat commercial on in the cinema. And I thought, well, you know, you wouldn't have seen that sort of a year or two ago. So it is going more mainstream. It is trying to become more, you know, more recognized. And I think that that takes time. It does take money as well, you know, advertising spend, etc. But I think it can, you know, I really think it can get there. I mean, the other thing I was thinking about this the other night, because I was wondering about why is it? So I've eaten, you know, Beyond Meat stuff, a burger specifically. Once I had, it was, you know, in Honest Burger, you know, small chain of burger shops in London. And another time I've bought from, well, a few times bought from Tesco. And I think their stuff is really good. But I think, why is it that I don't, if I go out, why don't I, if I saw it on the menu, why wouldn't I buy it? Why wouldn't I go for it? And, you know, and I think that if it did make me go for it, I think that it would have won its war. Because I think I, you know, I don't go out that often. Yeah, I don't get out very often. And so I suppose when I go out, I want something that I know that is definitely going to be good and that I'll like. And I know that I like a normal burger and, or I say normal, you know, beef burger and things. I know that I'll like that. Now I know that, I don't know, it is difficult. And I think getting meat eaters to just go, I feel like a Beyond Meat burger today, rather than I feel like a burger. You know, if they can do that somehow, maybe through marketing, I don't know, then I think that that would be, you know, that would be a great thing. So I think that I don't think that this is a case of it's a fad, you know, it's over, it's, you know, the growth is going to be, you know, the growth is maturing. I still think there is a massive potential upside. And I think that if they can somehow break through with continuing to improve their products, to lower their prices, I do think there's huge potential here. So, you know, in my opinion, I would say that, you know, this is something I would look at the long term, rather than think about it, oh no, it's not very good now, you know. Yeah. So that's what I would think.
Absolutely. I'm glad you touched upon kind of this thing about ordering a Beyond Meat burger in a restaurant, because actually one of my biggest issues Beyond Meat burgers has got nothing to do with Beyond Meat and nothing to do with the burger. I think as a company, they probably need to engage more with the restaurants that are supplying their burgers, because if you go to a standard restaurant, if I'm going to go out for a burger, I kind of want, I'm going out for it and I want it to be kind of an exceptional burger, because without this, that's a dish you can get in multiple fast food places. So if I'm going to go out to a restaurant to have a burger, I want it to be something kind of a cut above. Nice choice of wording there. And you go to most of these places and you get kind of this, probably 10 different wonderfully kind of designed beef burgers. So you have like your ones with brie and bacon and cranberry and whatever on them, and then you get to the bottom of the menu and it says Beyond Meat Burger with kind of a lettuce leaf and a tomato or something. And I think for a lot of meat eaters, if you're going out for a burger, you're not going to be drawn away from your beef burger by something that looks fairly plain.
Or
no effort's gone into it.
Yeah, or something that you could do yourself at home.
Exactly. So, and I know a lot of meat eaters that have eaten Beyond Meat Burgers and either say they really like them or can't really tell the difference or...
Yeah.
Whatever, and I think if the same amount of effort went into kind of creating the dishes with these kind of meat alternatives, I think they'd be more likely to sell more of them on off menus, if that makes sense.
I think that's a very that is a very good point. And actually, I suppose that's why you hear when Beyond Meat do stuff, they have been working with you know, McDonald's or whoever it is, KFC or something. They've been working with them for a while So presumably there's a map that they are trying to do that. I just think they just need to do more of what they're doing. I think that's what they need to do, and just do more of it. And I think that they will get there.
Yeah, because it's interesting you say that, working with McDonald's, because the McPlant that's just come out is a Beyond Meat patty, isn't it? And they've been working, they said they were going to be doing that about a year ago. And it looks like they put loads of effort into making sure that the vegan cheese that goes into it works is the same as in a Big Mac, that the sauce is up to scratch, rather than it just being a token vegan option on the bottom of the menu. Yeah. It looks like they put a lot of effort into making sure all the constituent parts are right before that's been launched.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they need to do in order to up-sell the brand.
Do you know what? It was really funny, right? The other day, I was at the gym and I remember it was funny. There was a conversation, and there were a lot of people in the gym who are vegetarian, and they were saying, God, you know, I really hate going to restaurants these days with all this vegan stuff, right? Because I want the cheese, I want the dairy product. And basically, what has happened over the years is that you've had restaurants going, right, vegetarian option. And I know that some of my vegetarian friends have complained that literally everything involves cheese if you have a vegetarian option. And that seems to have changed once again to, you know, like an alternative meat or something.
Mm.
And so what these guys in the gym were saying was that I thought was quite interesting. They said that what has happened now is you have a menu that has, you know, got everything in. And then at the end, you've got the vegetarian option, which is actually a vegan option, because then the idea, presumably, from the kitchen's point of view, is that you've got vegetarians and vegans covered by
kill two birds with one stone sort of thing.
Exactly. Well, in fact, or even not kill two birds with one stone. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, so I did think that was interesting as well. So I think there's, you know, if offerings can change, then I think that will also be good as well for their business.
Mm, definitely. So that was what I found most interesting anyway. So how about you this morning, Peter? What did you find most interesting in today's Watson's Daily?
So I thought that JD Sports was quite interesting. So JD Sports fell by 6% in trading yesterday. I don't know, I haven't seen it today, but apparently it was because the chairman, who's Peter Cowgill, he sold 10 million shares, which is half of his stake in the business, which got him £20 million. Now, I don't know when he sold it. I don't know if he sold. I presume he didn't sell it yesterday. But anyway, the fact is he sold loads.
Mm.
Now, investors generally, they look at this, and if they see anyone, like, you know, any like a CEO, a chairman, any CFO, actually CFO even more, I'd say, you know, if they see any of those kinds of people selling the shares, they immediately panic, think they must know something that's going on that we don't, and then they sell off as well. Now, I think the thing is, if they do know that there is something wrong, then they'll probably get caught out later, go to jail perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you know, it does happen, but I'd say it's unlikely. And the fact is, this guy, Peter Cowgill, been around for years, he's you know, almost 70. Why not sell down your shares? I mean, it seems to me that JD Sports has been in the center of this whole athleisure thing. It's been doing extremely well. You know, at one stage I was thinking how many trainers and joggers and hoodies can you have? You know, surely this athleisure thing is going to stop at some point, but apparently not. So I mean, I think that they, and you know, they're expanding overseas as well. So I don't know. I mean, I just think that they will continue to do. I don't see any reason for them to not do particularly well over the next, you know, over the next 6 to 12 months. I mean, things like this sometimes are tricky. But you know, often they're one-offs, and you know they bounce back. I mean, you know, another one, for instance, was when Julian Dunkerton, who was the co-founder of Superdry, he sold off a massive chunk of Superdry shares a few years ago to finance his divorce settlements. So you know, there's these one-offs. I mean, I would imagine there's nothing here, so you know, nothing to see, but yeah. So I thought that was quite good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the point you made with Superdry, or the comparison with Superdry, is an interesting one as well. I think both of these share that kind of element of the person has been quite, or there's been a quite upfront reason given for why the shares are being sold, and it's a believable one. Something people can kind of go, well, that makes sense, because yeah, you got a very, and it was a very expensive divorce, wasn't it, that he was financing there?
Yes.
And Peter Calgar, well, the analysts are saying that this sale is in relation to family wealth planning, which at age 70, when you've been around for, oh, I can't remember how long, ages, completely makes sense. And it's, I think, in terms of, like I say, this is the sort of activity that normally triggers panic in investors, but not so much as when someone like a long-standing chairman sells a lot of shares and doesn't give a reason for it.
Yeah.
So I think, and I'm also a bit staggered like you with the kind of the continuing growth of this sector, because like you say, how many pairs of jogging bottoms, trainers can you own? But actually, the business is in a really strong place. The industry is in a strong place. And the reason given for him doing this at age 70, which, let's be fair, isn't young, completely makes sense. So I think, a bit of a blip. The shares have gone down 6%, but realistically, I don't think they're going to take that long to go back up again.
Yeah.
If I'm honest, I could be wrong. Yeah. Hopefully not.
No, we'll see. We'll see, won't we? And, you know, actually, earlier when we were talking about this, I did sort of bring up the G word, Gymshark, thinking about, you know, obviously, athleisure. I mean, that's more sport. I'd say that's the more the sporty end of athleisure, rather than your sort of pink Vela lounging around stuff. So, and you know, there were rumours last year that it was going to, you know, go public, and then they tried to dampen down the rumours. So, but I do think, you know, if Gymshark were to go public, I would have thought it would go incredibly well. I mean, I found it, the weird thing I found is, if you go to a normal commercial gym, like a, you know, like you know, the Gym Group or Pure Gym or something like that, I would say the majority of people in there are wearing at least one item of Gymshark clothing.
Normally a fully matching set of everything.
And I think that it's, you know, and I think that it's well priced. It's good. It fits as it says it should. I think it's it's decent stuff. The weird, I don't know why it is, but you know, I do CrossFit, and I don't know why, but no one in there wears Gymshark at all. And I wonder whether it's, you know, is it an age thing? Is it a CrossFit thing? I mean, I've no idea. But anyway, my point is, I think that a lot of people rate it highly, and I think if it did go public, I think it would be incredibly popular. I mean, it's opening, isn't it? It's opening its store. I mean, I saw a YouTube video with Ben Francis a few weeks ago, and he was talking about the opening of that. And I can imagine, I mean, you know, if he either did an IPO on the opening or shortly after the opening, I mean, the hype would be absolutely massive.
They'd be able to get
loads of interest, I would have thought. But you know, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. Maybe he wants it to be a private company for a while, so he can develop more stuff, outside the gaze, the constant gaze of investors, you know, that you would have as a publicly listed company. But I do think that it would be quite, you know, it would be very, very popular. I'd like to see it do well as well, because it's just nice, isn't it, to see like a British lad starting this company up, doing well, and, you know, taking on the likes of Nike, Adidas, and all the rest of them.
And that's the thing is, it is, I mean, relative to its competitors, it's a young company still, isn't it? I think it's 10 this year, Gymshark,
yeah.
2012.
Yeah.
So, it's 10 this year, and it's got an absolutely ridiculous amount of brand loyalty. Like you said, the people that buy Gymshark will probably only buy Gymshark. And I think, I mean, in terms of major product lines, it's pretty much all there now. Like I say, you might want to develop a few more things. The only thing I can see that the competitors make they don't at the moment really is footwear. I think if they cross that bridge, maybe that's what they want to do before they go public. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would be, I reckon it would be very popular. And a lot of people, we've seen from stories last year, the average age of investors seems to be dropping and dropping.
Mm-hmm.
And Gymshark as a company, I can definitely see younger investors in kind of the 20s and 30s investing in. Because it's a company they know the product, they like the product, they trust the product. Ben Francis is a very likable guy, and actually... Yeah. See, you look at him, you watch even just one YouTube video, and you think, well, yeah, actually, I would trust what he put his name behind.
Yeah,
I think all that kind of means if and when they do go public, it'll be a very strong IPO.
Well, yeah, I mean, also recently he took on Gary V, didn't he, as his marketing guy, and you think, oh, that, you know, Gary V wouldn't do any old company, and you presume that Gary V would also be pretty interested in a company that's going to go public. So I mean, I don't know, I think it's a great brand. I tell you what, if they did make footwear, what would make it explode even more is if it was like vegan footwear or sustainable or something. It's because if you see what happened with Allbirds last year, I mean that would just tickle. It would tickle so many boxes, wouldn't it? Really, you know, sustainable, fast-growing young company, founder-led. Loads of things. So I think it'd be incredibly popular if it did that. I don't know whether it will, but if it did, that would be amazing.
So that reminds me of another company in a similar sphere, not as well known as Gymshark yet, a company called Tala, because they're again founder-led. Still early phase of Venmo, but all their stuff is sustainable and it's very popular on that basis.
Oh, right. What's it called again?
Tala, T-A-L-A.
All right.
I'm not surprised because I think at the moment they make predominantly female / possibly some unisex clothing. So,
there you go.
There you go.
Yes. Okay.
So that might be why you haven't heard of them.
Yes, fair enough. Okay. All right, well, good. Well, look, on that bombshell, I think we'll leave it for today. Just to say to people on here, if you are a subscriber to Watson's Daily, silver and above, you will be seeing Watson's Yearly being published over the weekend. This is what we've been working on for the last 3 to 4 weeks. It's, as I've probably said in earlier podcasts, review of 2021, preview of 2022, write up of all G20 countries, anything you need to know, you know, in a short, you know, little bite-sized stuff, and also some themes to look out for this particular year. That's coming out, as are a whole set of new monthlies to cover last year. It's important for you to understand, if you want to be good at using all this information, it's important for you to understand the background. So that's why I do think that it's a good idea to understand what happened last year and look back on it. I've also included this year a COVID timeline. So this goes into every month. And the idea is that it shows you how policy on COVID and moves on COVID and things have impacted the business news of that month. So I think it's great. And the other thing as well is that the yearly is going to be updated throughout the year. I've now got a team of ambassadors who will be updating it, so it will be live, it will be relevant, and any kind of developments in the themes that I pick will also be included in there as well. So again, it's just all about a nice kind of roadmap that will set you up for this year. But anyway, there you go. Thank you very much indeed, Duncan, for your time and insight.
As always.
Indeed, no, absolutely. And thank you very much indeed, as always, for the listeners, for listening to this podcast. Hope you find it useful. If you do, recommend it to your friends. Please say nice things about us and all that. And we'll be back again very soon. Many thanks.
Thanks, Bye. Take care.
Bye.